I'm really grateful I got asked to speak, though. So my sobriety date is November 12, 2013. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I stay pretty active in the program, and I believe that is a big part of why I stay sober. And I just want to read this part in the book that my sponsor first showed me when I was getting sober, because I really questioned whether I was an alcoholic or not, because I had never had a DUI, never been to jail. I didn't lose a whole lot, all those yets we talk about. But in the book, on page 44, it says, "If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic." And that was me. Whenever alcohol was put into my system, I had to have more. And if I was trying to control it, I wasn't having fun. So I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up on the East Coast with both my parents, and I had a pretty loving home, but I always felt different. I always felt like the weird one out. Never really felt like I fit in anywhere. And especially when I got into middle school, I desperately wanted to be liked. And I think that's something all alcoholics can relate to, is that people-pleasing, wanting to be liked, wanting to be appreciated. And I never was. I got teased and bullied a lot for various reasons, and all I wanted was to be in the cool crowd, be popular, be liked, and I never got that. My parents were always trying to help me out because I was a little shithead and I was pretty crazy, but they loved me, and you know, I desperately wanted to be liked. And I moved out to California. I went to high school here. I went to Mount Whitney. Go Pioneers. And I started to find my niche. I hadn't started drinking or doing anything like that around then, but I never did anything in moderation. And that's how I kind of knew I was an alcoholic. I didn't eat food in moderation. I didn't do anything in moderation. But I didn't start drinking until I was 18. And 28 now, I got sober when I was 26. It only took me 8 years to kind of hit that incomprehensible demoralization. But I moved back to North Carolina. I started a job at Starbucks, and I was really excited because it was my first real job. And I started working with a girl named Sarah, and she was about 5 years older than me. And she was everything I wanted to be. She was cool, she was fun, she was funny, she was beautiful. And I desperately wanted to be close to her. So we started hanging out, and she said one day, "Do you want to go to a bar with me?" I'd never been to a bar. I was 18. I was like, "How am I going to get in?" And she's like, "Don't worry about it." So I was a bar drinker right off the bat. You know, I really liked bars. And I remember the first time I took a drink at 18, I got this warm feeling of like, oh my God, this is what I've been missing my whole life. Everything's amazing now. Like, I thought I was funny. I thought I was cool. I thought all those things I wanted to be when I was younger, I felt like if I drank, I could get those things. And so I started drinking a lot at that point. I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, the book they talk about, at one point we may have been non-alcoholic, and at some point we crossed over to an alcoholic. I don't know when that was, but, and I'm not going to stand here and say, like, those times weren't fun, because I did have fun when I first started drinking. It just turned into a black hole for me. But I started going out, started doing that, heavy drinker off the bat. I remember I had my first blackout when I was 19, and I was kind of nervous about that, but everyone I drank with said that's normal. You know, blacking out's totally normal. It's okay. It's what we do. And I'm like, cool, you know? And it wasn't until I got into the program I realized blackouts are not normal. They're not common among normal drinkers. But, you know, so at that point, I decided I wanted to go to college and do something with my life. So I moved back to California, started college in San Francisco, and this disease is really progressive. The blackout started happening more frequently. my grades started to drop, I started learning that I could use alcohol for a crutch. Whenever I was happy, whenever I was sad, depressed, upset, anything, I had a good reason. I thought it was a good reason to drink at the time. And I had some things happen. You know, there was one time I had went out drinking and I had a horrible blackout, and I was with a guy at the time I had been with for about 2 years, and I basically made out with somebody in front of him and didn't remember it at all. And the next morning he woke up and he was pissed off, and I was like, why are you so mad? He's like, do you not remember what you did? And I was like, no. And he told me, and I was like, well, I was in a blackout, so I don't remember, so it doesn't count. And he was so pissed. But it's that alcoholic thinking that tells us, like, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's your fault for being so upset about it. You know, we never want to take responsibility for our actions. So somehow I graduated. Don't know how, but I did. And I moved back to Visalia. And at this point, I was kind of drinking alone. And I decided, I decided to get gastric bypass surgery, and that's part of my story because I believe that it really sped up my alcoholism, because after gastric bypass surgery, alcohol hits us differently. We have like 2 drinks, get really drunk, you sober up, and you got to keep having more. They warned me after I had the surgery to take it slow on the drinks, but I didn't really, I'm an alcoholic, so I didn't, you know, think anything of that. And I believe that really made my alcoholism go in full force, and blackouts were all the time. And I decided I wanted to go to graduate school. I started school in Southern California to get my master's in social work, and things were going good, and yet I just couldn't stop drinking. And like I said, I was a bar drinker. And I decided that if I had a friend to come with me or somebody was coming with me, I was not an alcoholic, because alcoholics go to the bar alone and drink alone. So I used people in the sense that I would call somebody I haven't spoken to in 3 years and say, hey, what are you doing? It's been so long. You want to go to the bar with me? Yeah, let's go. And eventually, people didn't want to go out every single night. So I started going by myself and just told myself, you know, I have friends at the bar now. I've been there enough. These are my pals. So I started doing that, and this dream I had of becoming a social worker started to slip away, because I would either not show up to school, I'd show up to school drunk. And I had one scare, and this kind of pushed me into going into rehab, along with a teacher saying, you smell like alcohol, you need help. I had this really bad habit of going on Craigslist and finding people to come drink with me, especially dudes, being honest here. And because I didn't really want to drink alone, you know. So I did that. And I went out one night, and I had gotten to the point that I was so inebriated that I got sexually assaulted by 2 guys. And that was kind of a waking up point for me. And I'm sure a lot of women can relate to having to go through that, especially when drinking. And so I quit school and I started rehab. And I went to rehab in Arizona, and the issue with that is I looked for all the differences and not the similarities. I got there, and a lot of people in there had did drugs, and I smoked pot a lot, but I didn't really do anything else. And I said, well, I'm an alcoholic. We're all different. And I made just excuses in my head so I wouldn't have to stay there. And I manipulated my way out. And as soon as I got out of there, I was there for 2 months. I was off and running again. I got a hotel that night, and I bought some alcohol, and I was off. So at that point, I moved back to Visalia again. And I was drinking alone a lot. Like, I didn't have any friends, really. I was dating another alcoholic boyfriend, and that was my life. I realized I could drink in the morning, and it would make the shakes go away. And I didn't know what the shakes were at the time. I thought it was just me being hungover, like, oh, I'm really weak and shaking, and I didn't realize those are actually DTs. And so I just became so depressed with my life. I didn't have any friends. You know, the one person that really, really had been there for me, my dad, I didn't call him on Father's Day, which I know sounds little, but it was a big deal for me. He called my roommate and said, have you heard from Amanda? I can't find Amanda. She hasn't called me, which is not like her. Just little things like that. And I realized my life was falling apart. You know, I wasn't in school anymore. I missed out on my dream, and I was living at my mom's house by myself, and I eventually started sleeping on my friend's couch at that point in Fresno. And I decided, you know, either I needed help or I was going to kill myself. Like, I had gotten to that point that I just wanted to die. And I had already been kind of in AA. I'd get like maybe a week, and then I go back out, get a week, then I go back out. So AA had already been implemented in my system. I just wasn't ready to commit to it. And I decided, you know, they talk about in the book doing controlled drinking. So I thought that was a good excuse to go out and drink some more. But, you know, it takes what it takes to get here. And I said, I'm going to have 6 drinks tonight, 6 drinks max. And I ended up, I know, it's pretty alcoholic, 6 drinks max. I couldn't do it. And I was, like I said, a blackout drinker. I drove so many times, and I drove home that night, didn't remember what happened. I had the DTs in the morning, and I just said, you know, I'm done. I'm done. I'm going to give AA a shot. Like, I knew about it. I was going to give it a shot. And so I sat outside Sierra Fellowship in Fresno, or Clovis, actually, and I just, that incomprehensible demoralization they talk about in the book, it's hard to describe unless you've been through it, and I'm sure we all can relate to it. You can't really explain it to anybody. It's just this deep, dark blackness, and that's how I felt my life was. And I sat outside there for about 2 hours when the meeting started, because I didn't know where else to go. It was the only place I felt safe. And I started going to meetings probably about like 2 or 3 times a day. And I really struggled. I cried a lot in the meetings, a lot. And that was okay, because people hugged me and said, we'll love you until you love yourself. It's okay to be honest and show your emotions. And I really appreciated that. And I really struggled with the God concept. Like, when I first came in here, I was pretty agnostic / borderline atheist. And I would see the word God on the board, and I'd hear somebody talk about God, and I'd walk outside and smoke a cigarette because I didn't want anything to do with that. But I got with a sponsor who I was open and honest with. I told her about my issues with God, and she said, are you willing to believe that I believe? And I said, yeah, I'm willing to believe that you believe. Obviously, this has worked for you. Your life has changed. I can see that. And she's like, let's just start there. So that's where I started, and that's all I had to do, because the God concept grows, and I'm sure there's people in here who are struggling with the God concept, because, you know, a lot of people have resentment towards God, or they don't believe in God. But at the point that I was at, I was like, either I'm going to give this a shot, what's the worst that could happen, you know? Obviously, I'm not in control, because when I try to control anything, it goes to shit. So I just gave up. I admitted I was powerless, and I started praying to something I didn't believe in. And the cool thing about this program is that it doesn't have to be religious. It's just something that is not you. You know, my higher power happens to be unity and love and the spiritual connection that we feel in these rooms, because I can't explain that. So that's what I pray to. It's not like a big man in the sky. And some people are religious in this program, and that's great. You do what works for you. Let's see. The biggest struggle I had, and I think a lot of a struggle with it is the people pleasing, and like I talked about, feeling like I didn't fit in. But everybody in these rooms are welcoming, and they understand, and it's okay to be yourself here. And that's what's so incredible. And by working the steps, I was able to get past some of these rough points in my life. Like the sexual assault, I started to go past that because that's not me anymore. You know, working my fourth and fifth step, all those resentments, they're not me anymore, and I don't have to live like that today. I got really involved in FICIPA, Fresno County Young People's in AA. That was something that really changed my sobriety, because my worst fear is I get into AA and I wouldn't have any more fun. Like, I'd be bored and there's nothing to do. I'm just going to sit at home and scroll Pinterest on Saturday night, like stuff like that. I was really afraid of that. I've learned there's always something to do in AA. There's events everywhere. Like, Vicky Paul's throwing a camp out next month. And it's an annual camp out. There's hundreds of alcoholics there. And it's so much fun. Like, I think I've had more fun in AA than I have, like, in the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. In a really long time. It's pretty incredible. And also, you know, I found this conference they had one in Fresno in 2012. We're trying to get it to Visalia. It's called ACIPA, All California Young People's in AA. And you see like 2,000, 3,000 people in a room, and they're doing a sobriety countdown, or they're saying the serenity prayer, and you feel this just great feeling of calm. You feel like something powerful there, and I can't really describe it, but anybody who's been to a conference with a bunch of people, it's pretty incredible. And that really changed my sobriety. I got a service position, which I highly suggest if you're new or in the program and don't have one, you know, secretarying or anything. I'm a programs chair for FICIPA, so I outreach to different people, and it's a lot of fun. And another thing is, you know, I try to get out of myself today, because as alcoholics, we're selfish and we're self-centered, and all we can think about is ourselves. And it kind of seems counterproductive to focus on other people, but that seems to help, you know, when I'm struggling in sobriety. I text a friend in the program and say, hey, how are you doing? Can I do anything for you today? How's it going? Or tell them how much I appreciate them. And what's great about this program is I've never really completed much in my life, but I have 21 months, and for me, that's some kind of miracle, you know? And I can't really explain how it works besides the fact that I stay in contact with my higher power, and I've had to walk through some struggles in sobriety, and people walk through a lot of struggles in sobriety, death, you know, loss, all kinds of stuff. You know, I was with somebody I got in a relationship early in sobriety. I highly don't suggest it. I know. And the person I had been with relapsed on a drug, and it was probably one of the toughest things I had to go through in sobriety, watching a loved one kill themselves, basically. And I got through it, and I got through it with the support of AA, through praying, through getting out of myself. I mean, I've watched people walk through death and all kinds of things and stay sober, so I know anyone can do it. And really, we're lucky to be here. I'm sure almost everyone in here has known somebody who's passed away because of this disease, or know of somebody who's passed away because of this disease. And it's heartbreaking. So we really are lucky to be in these chairs today, because we don't have to live like that anymore. I was merely existing before, and now I'm actually living a life I can be proud of. And it's not perfect every day. I mean, it's not all sunshines and rainbows every single day, but I have tools to get through any struggles because of this program. It really is a design for living. I really think the world would be a better place if everybody worked a program, alcoholic or not. So, you know, if you're new or fairly new, I highly recommend getting a sponsor to walk you through the steps. Your life can change tremendously. I've seen so many people just become a good version of themselves and happy and content and joyous and free. And I can say that for myself today, and I never thought I would say that. Like right now, I've started school again, picking up where I left off. I have a better relationship with my family today, just a better person all around. So, you know, get a sponsor, work the steps, you know, try to get a service physician. That really seemed to help. There's always things to do here. And I think that's all I have to say. I know I'm ending early, but thank you for asking me to speak. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Amanda. Does anybody have any questions for Amanda? Did you want to say a little more about that AA youth group? Do you have anything to say about that? Would you like to
talk a little more about it? Okay. So I'll talk a little more about FIKIPA in case anybody's interested, or any kind of young peoples. So I see there are a lot of young peoples in here. And young is defined as anybody with room left to grow. It's not like for certain age groups. I mean, we have plenty of people 70 and over in FIKIPA. So it's a service committee. We bid for ACIPA, which I talked about, the All California Young Peoples and Alcoholics Anonymous. We bid to have that conference in a certain area. Next year, we're going to bid to have it in Visalia. So we're hoping to get it. But FIKIPA is a service committee. On top of that, we work with H&I. We put on events in Fresno. Like, we have the camp out coming up, which if anyone's interested, it's a lot of fun. We do panel meetings, speaker meetings, bonfire. We play games, meditation, all different kinds of stuff. It's a lot of fun. September 17th through the 19th. Also, let's see. There's young people's groups all over California. If you know anybody in a different area, I'm sure they have young people's group. I know Tulare was trying to start something up in this area. It's a great way to be in service. It's a great way to get to know people. That's how I started knowing people. And especially because I heard one person say, if you're a purple alcoholic, go find other purple alcoholics. So you find people that you can relate with, because there's all different kinds of people in AA. And if you have any questions about FIKIPA or getting involved in like a young people's committee, we got a couple of people from Fresno over here too that would be happy to answer any questions about that or me. And it's a lot of fun. So I've been to two ACIPAs. ACIPA? Okay. So ACIPA is All California Young Peoples and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a huge convention. It's from Thursday to Sunday. It varies each year. Next year it's going to be in Orange County. Basically, they have it at a hotel or some sort of convention center, and they have 24-hour marathon meetings. They have big, big speaker meetings, like 2,000-plus people. They have games and activities. You get to meet people from all over the world, like people from Canada come, and Mexipa from Mexico comes. There's dances, yes, lots of dances. Is it like a big birthday? It's like a big whoopee party, like they say in the book. What else is there? Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. They had it last year was in San Jose, before it was in Redding. So it's all over the state. And a lot of times you just got to get in the car and go, you know? And if you don't have the money for it, it's suggested donation. So people aren't going to say you can't come to the conference, you know? So it's a lot of fun. Yeah. Yes. Started working the steps. That is a good question. It was scary at first, because I don't think any of us like to admit that we're an alcoholic and that we're powerless. And don't have control over our drinking, but that's the great obsession of every drinker, abnormal drinker, is that someday we'll be able to drink like normal people. And so I think step one is the only one I had to do 100% thoroughly. That's what my sponsor told me. And to really believe deep down in your heart that you're an alcoholic. The fourth step, second and third step, I kind of talked about with the God thing. It's difficult, but for me, I just started praying, and that seemed to help. And then the fourth step, a lot of people are scared of it because you have to address resentments and things about yourself that you don't want to address, including your past. But doing the fifth step, like telling somebody about, right, like reading them your list and knowing your part in situations, is really freeing. It's a really freeing feeling. Six and seven, looking at your character defects, that's always fun because we have to address it. We have to address where we can improve ourselves and be closer to our higher power, because those are the things that kind of stand in the way. Eighth and ninth step, you know, doing the amends, those are probably my favorite steps, because it feels so good to clean house, to clean up your side of the street. And, you know, sometimes people aren't going to accept your amends. The ex that I had mentioned, that I had that blackout incident with, he didn't want to talk to me. I had tried to make an amends to him, and he didn't want to hear it. And sometimes, you know, my sponsor told me things like that happen, and there's nothing you can do about it. At least you tried, and, you know, at least I tried with that. But generally, people are pretty accepting of an amends, and they say, we just want you to stay sober. That's how you can make things right. 10, 11, and 12 is really about looking at yourself and giving back. I mean, being in service is so important in this program. I mean, even just pouring coffee or, like, reaching out to a newcomer is incredibly helpful and important. So the steps, they really have changed my life. They helped me to be a better person, and they're really important to this program. I know a lot of people who will sit on steps, like sit on the fourth step, because they're afraid to actually go through it and do the work, but at the end of it, it's very freeing. So that's what I have to say about steps. Well, I went through it probably in the first year, but I started back over because I didn't do it as thoroughly as I liked. I was still having issues in other areas, and my sponsor suggested that we go back through the steps because maybe there was something I missed. But it really depends on who you choose as a sponsor. Okay, some sponsors have people go through the 12 steps in like 3 months. Some people, it takes 3 years, you know. It depends on who you pick. And I think that's really important when picking a sponsor. You pick somebody that you can relate with, somebody that has what you want. And it's always good to sit down with them beforehand and decide if this is going to be a good fit. You know, I call my sponsor for everything. I call her for issues with friends, with relationships, with steps. I called her before coming here because I was super nervous. So, I mean, I call her for everything. And some sponsors aren't like that. Everyone's a little different. But I think the fact that I use my sponsor and my support group as much as I can, it really helps me stay sober. I use my support group for everything that I can, because I'd rather talk to my support group than go out and drink. So, but yeah, it really depends. Any more questions? Sure. I'm not sponsoring anyone at the moment. I sponsored one girl for a little bit. She moved away, but not at the moment. I would love to sponsor, but I just haven't been asked yet. So,
Can I call on people to come up? Maria, would you like to come up and speak or share?
No.
She's getting revenge on me because I asked her about how she works her steps. I'm Mireya. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, this is weird. My sobriety date is May 20th, 2012. I got... Thank you. Okay. And that's it. I'm just kidding. I start making jokes when I'm nervous. I got sober when I was 26. I know I look really young, huh? One of my friends thought that I was 22 today, she told me. But I'm not. Thanks, you guys. Anyways, I got sober at 26. I'm Mexican, so alcohol is... I'm an alcoholic because I'm Mexican. There. I said it. No, I'm not. No, that's not why I'm an alcoholic. My dad's an alcoholic. My mom's crazy. Her and I have always had a horrible relationship. So like, I'm in my life, like I'm really used to chaos and being miserable. Misery is something that I know really, really well. Alcohol was a thing that made me feel like I was a part of, kind of like how Amanda was talking about. I got sober because I was so very good at drinking that by the time I was 26, because I started drinking when I was 15, by the time I was 26, I had an enlarged liver. And in my family, since I'm a Mexican, it's really... Alcohol is, like, I didn't even know alcoholism was a thing. Like, I thought alcohol, like, being drunks all the time and drinking, I thought that was, like, the normal thing that everybody did. I didn't really have a lot of friends at the end of my drinking. The people I would hang out with would be my family. And they were, like, they still encourage me till this day to drink with them. They're still, like... It's been 3 years, and they're still like, do you want me to go buy you a bottle of Jack Daniels? Because they know, like, that was my shit. And now they have that freaking honey one. He's like, do you want to try it? And I'm like, dude, you're stupid. Like, I'm not going to drink. Try a little bit harder to convince me. Anyways, I'm really rambling. My story is way more interesting than this. I'm just kind of trying to kill some time and embarrass myself a little bit. So, because I've never been up at a podium, like, speaking at a speaker meeting. Only every time Amanda asks me to come speak because she's freaking, like, is hella short on purpose. I feel like she cuts it short. She's like, all right, now I'm going to have my friends tell you about stuff. And so thank you for that, little jerk. And so anyways, I have a sponsor. I've worked the steps, and I was like, I think I'm a good example of what it's like to be, like, at the bottom of, like, feeling really terrible about yourself, hating yourself, like, more than anything else, being alone, and just, if I had money, what I would do with that money, like, my sister gave me $100 one time when I was still out there, and what I did was, I tipped the bartender very well because he was handsome, and I drank the whole night until Like, I ended up in my sister's car, and I had no, like, I'm a really clean alcoholic. Like, I wouldn't throw up on things or people, except maybe twice. That night I ended up, like, throwing up on myself, and, like, I was so drunk I couldn't even move, and it was like, I understand now, like, the kind of alcoholic I am. I'm gonna drink till I'm like throwing up on myself and I can't move, you know? So that's pretty good of me. And I was a beer bong champion. So I would beat out all the people who would like try to drink with me. And now my life is completely different. I thought that I was going to, like, die in my room of liver disease or whatever. At that point, when the doctor told me that I had an enlarged liver, I decided I had two choices. I was either going to, you know, continue to... Because, I mean, I'm kind of a funny person, but my life has been complete misery since I could remember. Like, I never, ever remember, like, my childhood. All the memories I have of my childhood are bad, negative ones. And now, I finally started living when I stopped drinking. I finally could feel something else besides misery. And the suicidal thoughts don't come very often. I think I had a very good period of time of not being suicidal and not being sad and not wanting to die. And it's only because I worked the steps, and I couldn't even, like, look up. If I were, like, when I first walked in, I hated myself so much that I didn't even feel, like, worthy of the sunlight. I had trash bags over my windows. My room was black. I couldn't make eye contact with people, let alone talk in front of everybody and embarrass myself. And I'm really grateful that I got here super desperate. Like, I was willing to do whatever it took to stay sober. And now my life is not the way that I want it to be, and I do not work a perfect program because it's impossible. And, you know, I tried because I'm kind of a perfectionist, but I gave up. I was like, you know, I can't work this program that good. So, yeah, if you're new, hang in there. Anything could happen to you. Anything in your life could happen, and you don't have to pick up a drink about it. I was recently in a car accident, and I was hit from behind, and I got whiplash really bad, and I was in a lot of pain. And what happened was I didn't pick up a drink because motherfucker, like, hit me from behind, and now I have really bad whiplash, and my back hurts, like, all the time, and I'm not drinking, you know? And I'm here, and I'm supporting my friend, who, look at her, she's, like, really red, and I'm probably red, too. And we just get through things together. No matter what happens in your life, no matter how many people you lose, because I've lost a couple people in sobriety, and I'm still hanging around, so being ridiculous and stuff. So I'm really thirsty, so thank you for listening.
Thank you, Maria. That was awesome. Good job. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship.